Hello and welcome to an Icky Bicky Pink Cast. I'm Audrey.
And this is Amber.
And today we're talking to you about obviously chronic pain, but today we're going to talk about chronic pain in your emotions. So how emotions show up and how they can affect our health and our mental health.
Yeah, so we wanted to bring up this discussion, and I think I'll start this discussion with a bit of an example to get us in the headspace of what we're talking about when we talk about this connection. So, if we picture having a panic attack, if that's something that you have in your life as part of your mental health struggle, maybe you've had panic attacks before. And so, if we think about what it feels like in our body when we have a panic attack, so we'll have tightness in our chest, we might get a lot of tension in our shoulders and our face. Our bodies, we might start feeling nauseous, we might get cramping, we might get dizzy, we might have a hard time breathing. And if we think about not like there's a mental health aspect of that, but that physical aspect is very real. So your body is undergoing a lot of strain, and that strain, any strain when you're dealing with chronic pain, any activity that we do has some sort of impact on how bad our pain is later. So after a panic attack, we might find that we're having a flare up. We might find that, oh, our back suddenly really hurts really bad, and forget that we had a panic attack earlier that caused a lot of strain on our bodies. And so thinking of that, there's this article. We did a bit of research for this podcast. And so a lot of the articles talked about how emotional processing is pain management. And the reason for that is not because processing our emotions is somehow going to get rid of our chronic pain. But what it does do is it has small benefits on reducing the pain severity and improving other pain-related outcomes we have. So any like pain behaviors we have, any ways that we learn to cope with our pain is all impacted by how we're processing our emotions. And there was this interesting way that an article phrased it where they talked about how we have primary emotions and secondary emotions. And in that, primary emotions are healthy or adaptive activation in specific concepts, in specific contexts. So, like when you're angry because you've witnessed something, you've witnessed an injustice, you've experienced a violation, somebody's crossed your boundaries and you're justifiably angry, or when you feel sad because you've gone through a loss, like these are natural reactions to a situation that you're going through. And then secondary emotions, they described as being emotions that inhibit or block a person's needs from being met and usually stem from avoidance and adaptive primary emotions. And so, what they mean there is things like shame, tension, stress, anxiety, frustration. And essentially, what they're saying is that it isn't the fact that you're angry or the fact that you're sad that is causing this strain on your body. It's actually the unprocessed nature of your emotions at that point. So, if your healthy reactions to situations that you're going through in your life are not being processed, they become secondary emotions that block us from getting our needs met. And this can show up in a lot of different ways. But I think it's really important to note here that throughout all this research, they are not saying that these are negative emotions or things that we should avoid. What they are saying is that we need to pay attention to how we're processing these emotions. Because, for example, if we're not processing our stress, or if we're going through a situation where we're feeling angry or sad, we don't process that emotion. We're having more panic attacks, for example, or we're feeling more depressed, so we're laying down more often than not. We're not engaging in things as we usually would if we were in a healthier mindset. So it's only when these emotions start to become non-adaptive, so they're not helping us anymore, we're pushing them away and not processing them. And that is obviously showing up in our bodies.
So, in turn, pain is the sensory and emotional experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the emotions are the key drivers and maintainers of chronic pain.
Exactly.
So by processing, we are managing our pain. We're not making it go away. We're not making the emotions go away, but we're mm-hmm. helping to heal our bodies and minds when we do that.
And that way, when we experience these emotions, because emotions share they don't share identical pathways, like brain pathways, but they are very similar and they overlap in a lot of areas of our brain. So we know that these brain pathways are being activated and they'll continue to be activated if we don't process these emotions. And when these emotions come up, when these situations come up that remind us of, say, a negative childhood experience of trauma, of stress that's in our lives, that severity of when we first experienced it is still there. So if we picture that panic attack that we had the other day, and then we kind of just went about our day and never thought about it again, never processed it, that panic attack is going to come back because those emotions are not being processed. And that ends up with our bodies being put under the same strain over and over again from a very similar experience because we're not dealing with it.
Yeah. And like we were saying, it shows up in the body and we don't even realize always that that's what's happening. Like, for example, you know, having prolonged stress can raise your blood pressure, which has happened to me recently. Having prolonged stress can make your pain worse, but also can be an indicator of chronic pain as well. Like, that's what you're saying too, right?
Yeah. So like our bodies as folks with chronic pain are so sensitive. They're so sensitive to, and not in a bad way, sensitive in a way that when we do things, when we engage with the world, they are very sensitive to when we're straining ourselves or when we're tight in areas or when we're not engaging in pain relief as we normally would. For example, if I don't get a good night's sleep, if I don't sleep through the night and get that 7 to 8 hours, I'm going to have more pain the next day. That is just something that happens if I don't sleep enough, because I'm sensitive to that. And so, of course, if we're having mental health struggle and we know that there are physical symptoms to all, not just panic attacks, depression, there are physical symptoms for all of these different mental illnesses that we may have, of course our bodies are going to respond a certain way. And they're going to feel the strain of those emotions. And the more often that we're not dealing with something, the more they're just going to continue to come up, because as one of the articles mentioned, I just want to pull it up to make sure that I get it right. But similar emotions tend to hurt similar to pain. And these sensations function as a signal that helps the person to become aware of a feeling that requires attention. And so what that means is that our bodies are continuing to show up with these physical responses from that panic attack that we ignored or from that depression that we're not dealing with. The body keeps reminding us of that because it's telling us, hey, something is going on in our body. There's this embodied emotion that we don't know how to process, that we don't know what to do with because it's not adaptive anymore. It's become non-adaptive. And the body is telling us hey, pay attention to this. We need to deal with this because the strain on our body is really hard. And I think it's really, I kind of like the idea of revaluing some of these things. When I went through therapy for my anxiety, for example, one of the things that I learned to be kind to myself was that whenever I was experiencing anxiety, having panic attacks, it was always related to something that was important to me. Whether or not the panic was, made sense for that situation or whether or not it was the appropriate response, either way, my mental health was saying, hey, this thing is really important to us and that's stressing us out and that's scaring us. And we need to deal with it. And I like the idea of seeing pain in a similar light in some cases. Like some days it does help to say, my body really hurts. And maybe that's because I've had 6 or 7 panic attacks this week. And maybe that's something that I should look at. This is my body telling me gently to pay attention.
Yeah. And it's almost nudging you at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
It's like a little reminder.
So, like, saying anxiety is an indicator of something you have to pay attention to. It goes hand in hand with being like, when I'm feeling this certain way, that means that this is happening. But if it's mm-hmm. prolonged, then it could change our physiological response and our psychological response, correct?
Yeah, it does. So some of the articles did mention that the ways that, for example, I went to, when I started my journey with chronic pain, I was prescribed a couple of antidepressants, and I kept telling them I'm having these physical symptoms, and they just didn't take it seriously. They kept saying, oh, it's just not the right antidepressant. We'll switch you to a new one. This antidepressant will fix it. And eventually I ended up having a lot of health crises. And this is not uncommon, because one of the studies mentioned psychiatric patients are more likely to die of natural causes than the general population, and they are more likely to have physical health issues. And the psychiatric symptoms that folks are experiencing may make them less likely to communicate their physical needs. So when I kept going back to doctors and saying, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, my body hurts, I don't know what's going on, the antidepressants are not helping, and they kept telling me, oh, we'll just try the next one. What I was learning in that situation is that my physical symptoms were not something to pay attention to. That they weren't, the pain I was feeling wasn't real until I was having such intense physical symptoms that they couldn't really ignore it anymore. And I think that this plays out as well in things like medical trauma. I think this plays out in ways of when you're anxious, you have anxiety, it may be hard to go to people and communicate to them that you have chronic pain. It might be difficult to have that conversation because, as we know, it's anxiety provoking. We don't know how people are going to respond to us. We don't know if they're going to be accepting of our condition. And of course, that adds a layer of stress and anxiety. And so you just might be less likely to get help. You might be less likely to be able to talk about your physical needs. You may not even know that you have physical needs. Like, I was very convinced at that point that all of my physical symptoms were just a part of my depression, that they were, you know, quote unquote, in my head, like all in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't taking them seriously. I wasn't resting. I wasn't like taking pain medicine. I wasn't pushing my doctors to get more medical testing done until it was serious, like really serious for them to actually pay attention to me.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of stuff gets ignored when we're in this space because, like you said, you're being told by not just your doctor, but you're probably being told by people in your life that you know, that's normal or something, like quote unquote normal.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've run into this quite a bit, and where I've been told, you know, you hide it well, you carry it well. Mm. And we've talked about this before, but it's happened as a recurring theme in my own life when I'm trying to seek like intervention through medical or through friends or through at work or anywhere I'm kind of asking for help, which I don't do often. Mm-hmm. So when I do, it's because I need it. So it's very disheartening when you do ask for help and you do need, like, I need to figure out what's going on in my body. And then you're being told, well, it's in your head, or you're being told, it's funny. And I think I mentioned this before too, is when you go to your doctor, when's the last time they asked you, you know, about your childhood trauma, or, yeah, you know, if you had any breakups or anything like significant changes in your life recently, or, you know, how your emotional well-being is, or if there's any trauma in your background. it's never asked when you're going to a GP appointment unless they know you well and it's associated with that, right? Unless it's associated with your mental health, you don't usually get asked those questions.
And then they tend to focus on one or the other. They'll focus on the physical symptoms that you're experiencing, or they'll focus on the emotional. It's one or the other. And they'll only treat it as one or the other when what all of this research is saying is that this is not something that can be separated.
Yeah.
Our emotions exist in our body. One of the articles calls it, when you're not processing your emotions, they call it embodied emotion. And that's because it's living in your body, because it doesn't have anywhere else to go. It's not being processed through, your brain pathways. It's not being processed in your mental health. You're not getting support for that. And I just had a thought as you were speaking too, we've been talking a lot about how this shows up in anxiety, but if we consider also depression, and if you have depression, you might have feelings of not being worthy. You might have feelings of, a lower self-esteem. You might have struggles with feeling like your life is worth living. And that's going to keep you as well from talking about your physical needs. That's going to keep you from going to a doctor or thinking that your pain is even worth mentioning. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was first getting diagnosed and I was first working through my pain, there was a moment in time when it was really dark, because the early stages of getting diagnosed are very lonely. They're kind of dark. You're rethinking your whole life. And I remember thinking, well, maybe, because I've had depression and anxiety since I was a teenager, since I was young, maybe all the negative thoughts and feelings that I had, maybe all the hating myself as a teenager, all of the negativity that I was feeding my body, maybe the physical pain is my fault. Maybe it's my fault that I've created this like echo chamber of pain inside of myself. And that's a hard way to visualize your chronic pain and feel like it deserves to be taken seriously. Like, if I picture my pain as something that I created myself because I didn't value myself enough as a teenager, I'm less likely to care if a doctor takes it seriously or to put my needs, say, first, you know?
Yeah.
And I really had to work through that onus and responsibility of, it's not my fault that this happened. Yes, I have unprocessed pain, but it's not my fault that the pain I'm experiencing is the way it is because of the way that our systems are set up, and because of the way that, as we've mentioned, dealing with your unprocessed pain is not going to take away your chronic pain, but it may help with the severity of it. But I think a lot of patients end up taking that on themselves.
Yeah. You know, it's funny when we're talking, it reminds me of a graphic that I used to use in my work that was from Wholehearted School Counseling. And it was like one of those things that I was scrolling on Pinterest and it caught my eye, not going to lie. But I've since gone to their site and they have so many really great free resources. But it was a graphic that was called If Feelings Could Talk.
Ooh.
And I just want to go through a couple of them. Sadness might be telling me I need to cry. Loneliness might be telling me I need connection. Shame might be telling me I need self-compassion. Resentment might be telling me I need to forgive. Emptiness might be telling me I need to do something creative, which we don't think about when we're feeling empty. Yes. Anger might be telling me I need to check in with my boundaries. Anxiety might be telling me I need to breathe. And stress might be telling me I need to take one step at a time. So
I love that.
Yeah. So it's like labeling it. It's kind of like the, the Cliff's Notes, because we were talking about emotions, secondary emotions, and what they're trying to tell us in our body. So like, aside from the pain, that's the kind of, if we're feeling angry, it's probably because we had our boundaries crossed, right? So figuring out which one of those boundaries have been crossed and how to kind of rectify that. And if we don't talk about that all day.
If we don't take that moment to realize, hey, my anger is telling me that my boundaries have been crossed. There's something in my life that's not working out. You know, there's a relationship or a work situation or something that is getting in the way of my boundaries being respected. If we don't deal with that, then they're going to continue to be crossed, and we're going to continue to be angry, and we're going to continue to carry that with us. And it's just going to build on top of each other. So that severity is not going away. And that's why it's so important that we pay attention and be able to label what emotions we're feeling, whether or not they're being processed, how it feels in our body. And if we can, it also helps us, I think, to make this connection to the body with mental health, because if I can say, all right, for me, my panic attacks show up as maybe I have the full, like I have heart trouble breathing, I get really tense. That allows me a lot of knowledge in how my body is functioning when my mental health is struggling. And that helps me to better take care of my chronic pain, because I can say, well, if it's going to show up in a lot of tension in my shoulders, for example, I know that I'm going to need maybe like a pain cream or something for my shoulders tomorrow. I'm going to need to ice that. It also tells me that while I'm icing that, maybe I should think about what is going on in my life that is causing these panic attacks, and what is it trying to tell me? Because you can't go on like that.
No. Long term, it's very, very bad for your body and your mind to continuously be in those places. For sure. And then that leads us to like talking about how the brain systems, like you were saying before, kind of make the predictions about the way our body's going to feel from moment to moment, rather than through stimuli. So it's not like we're touching something hot and feeling it. It's kind of like it's taking a graph or taking a mental note, or I don't know, however you want to say it, of how you're reacting to things. And then that becomes a pattern that your brain uses from henceforth to respond to stimuli. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Definitely. I found that really interesting. So it was talking a lot about how basically something that I think is kind of common in the mental health literature is we know that the past connects to our present a lot of the times. We know that because of childhood trauma, because of a bad relationship, something we went through, we might have like an unhelpful way of coping with that experience because we only had the resources we had at that moment. And if you were children, for example, you didn't have a lot of resources, so you may not be coping in a way that's helpful to you as an adult. But this research takes that a little bit further and talks about how those predictions are not just impacting like the mental health pathways or our coping mechanisms. It's impacting sensations are getting grounded in the brain. So when we're feeling a certain way, when we're in that situation, we get triggered or activated. It's not just that you're following a similar pattern of thoughts from your childhood. It's also you're following a similar sensation memory in your body from those moments. And that could change the amount of attention that we're paying to different parts of our body. It could be changing the amount of attention that how we respond behaviorally to these sensations. So if you, for example, grew up in a childhood where maybe your pain wasn't taken seriously, or you had to take care of yourself a lot, you might not pay as much attention to your body. Like it might be worthwhile for you to have learned in your childhood to dissociate from your body. Mm-hmm. And so you don't know how much pain you're in, or it may convince us that there's nothing wrong with us. There's no point in complaining because, you know, all the people around us in our childhood kept telling us that you're overreacting, your pain isn't that bad, you're just really sensitive. And so you grow into an adult who learns that, you know, these sensations in my body are not a big deal, and that it's normal to be in a lot of pain, and then your body adapts. So I have a little story. When part of my chronic pain journey, it started when I was from what I can remember, I think it started earlier than this, but from what I can remember, I had a workplace injury where I slipped and fell on my back, and it was really bad. I wasn't able to move or stand up straight. It took a lot of recovery time. And it went, my doctor didn't take it seriously. So it went untreated for an entire year until I went to university. And then I went back to my doctors. They sent me to a physiotherapist. And I remember being in the physiotherapist's office for the first time. And he simply sat back and he said, walk. And I was like, what do you mean? And he said, well, walk up and down the room. I just need to see like how you're moving. And so I walked up and down, I walked up and back to him, and he immediately said, you have pain in your lower back. You have pain here. I can tell because your body is moving in a way that it's adapted to protecting itself. So the way that you're walking, the way that your feet are, the way that your shoulders are hunched, the way that you are moving is all designed to protect your lower back because it's been in so much pain and untreated for so long that it's just had to adapt to that. And that wasn't something I was aware that I was doing. So I wasn't aware that it was so obvious that somebody who's looking for those behaviors could see off the bat, oh yeah, you have chronic pain. Like I can tell it's been untreated for a long time. I can tell in the way you hold yourself. That was not something I thought. I just thought I was walking around like normal. I didn't think there was any changes, but it was completely visible because my body was predicting the sensation of pain, predicting that it wasn't going to be taken seriously. And then it changed the way that it moved, and it started moving in a way that started to impact the rest of my body. Because, you know, walking in a way that is that protective isn't good for your shoulders or your back or your knees or like anything, and you start to lose a lot of strength in your body because you're too afraid to move it. And I thought that that was really interesting.
So would it be safe to say that your doctor failed to recognize your physical conditions because of your panic attacks and the mental health issues that you were experiencing?
I would say that that is fair. It did seem, I remember going to her and I kept telling her that, you know, it doesn't make sense. I've been on bed rest for so long. I can barely move. There are times when I turn and I'm just frozen. Like, this doesn't make sense. You have to do something. And they would continue to say, well, you know, you can't let your anxious thinking about your pain, like govern what you're doing in your life. You know, it's probably not as bad as you think it is. You're just afraid that it's as bad as it is. And I think a lot of that came down to the fact that a year or so before, I had started going on antidepressants. And so she had this idea of me as a patient where she couldn't take me seriously. And she ended up just giving me a bunch of pain medicine and sending me on my way and not doing any testing whatsoever until I finally moved away and got different doctors and kind of refused that, because at that point I was at the point where I couldn't sit through my classes without being in so much pain that my brain would get cloudy, and I was being told that that was normal or that I was overreacting, and that was so clear to this physiotherapist that that was obviously not the case. So it's weird that the physiotherapist could see that right off the bat in our first session in the first 5 minutes. And this doctor, family doctor that I'd been going to at the time, didn't even click in, didn't even take that seriously as an option.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting because you're kind of like typecast as a certain person that had certain things going on and nothing was looked at outside of that box.
Exactly. And I think it's because we categorize our physical symptoms. We categorize our emotions, we categorize our mental health and our chronic pain as separate things. And we really need to stop doing that because it isn't useful to us. It's not getting us the care that we need. We know from the other article that it's actually like causing people to die more often, because too often, and I think I'm on a little bit of a different track. I keep coming back to a couple different thoughts. But I think that that has a lot to do with the way that there's a lack of curiosity from doctors. So, you know, it's really hard to talk about pain. It's really hard to conceptualize it. It's really hard to make sense of it, to describe it. And I was a teenager and, you know, I had been living pretty able-bodiedly from then. So I didn't really have the vocabulary that I do now for explaining my pain. If the doctor had maybe asked me more questions about where is this pain coming from, you know, what does it feel like? When does it get activated the most? Can you sleep? Can mm-hmm. you go about your day? You know, what's your mental health like? And how does that impact your pain, if it does at all? And maybe then they would start to see that there were separate things that were going on that were related, but they were not dependent on each other. They were just results.
And, like, it's been brought up before in our group and in our conversations, mm-hmm. too, is that when you go to the doctor, you have, like, 15 minutes max, usually.
Yeah.
And some doctors will say one thing at a time, like, one issue at a time. But when you have chronic pain conditions, you usually have multiple symptoms that kind of, like, interact with each other. Do you think that it makes sense to go in with the mindset of this isn't helping, my pain is still there, maybe I should ask for a referral to psychiatry or to psychology? What are your thoughts on, because I know, like, before, I think things have progressed some, but, you know, would it be helpful or harmful for someone to be in that light if they are, like, a person who is experiencing mental illness, and then maybe they might have the same experience as it's not taken seriously, but also maybe hopefully things are changing and that will have a more holistic approach. Like, what are your thoughts?
I do think that it's really important that both of these things be looked at. So for me, what really helped for my doctors, because I went to the doctors, I went to a physiotherapist, but then they continued to put me on antidepressants even though the pain wasn't going away. And what changed for me was I did go to counseling because I had things to deal with. That is still true, that I was dealing with depression and anxiety as well. And I was very lucky to get a counselor who looked at me and said, you know, okay, that's a physical symptom. And it might be related to your mental illness, but it also might not. And I want you to go and get these things checked. Like, it was my counselor who said, go and ask them to check your vitamins. Go and ask them to check this. Because I want to make sure that we're not treating something as a mental illness that is actually a physical illness. And if, you know, you go back and you get some results, we'll continue to do therapy. We'll talk about the results that you get. And if you continue to experience, you know, the mental health struggles that I was experiencing, we'll get deeper into that. But first, make sure that this is a mental health issue and not a physical body issue. And it was through that referral from her that I was able to get support, because the psychiatrist was able to pull apart. And I'm not sure that all psychiatrists could do that. I'm not sure. I think I was lucky to have the counselor that I did, who was also experiencing chronic pain, so kind of had an idea of what was going on. But I think a counselor can really help you to pull apart, okay, what are the actual impacts of me being anxious or having depression? And are they related to chronic pain, or are they just impacting one another? Like, what is the real situation here? As counselor, I think, can help you to pull that apart. And so I think it is, I also think it's really important if you have chronic pain, because there's so many mental health struggles that are unique to having chronic pain. Mm-hmm. The experience of loneliness, the experience of grief of the body that you used to have. There's a lot that goes into being somebody who was able-bodied and then becoming somebody who isn't, and the struggle that is, that I think if you have chronic pain, it might be useful to go to counseling just to talk about, even if it's just the chronic pain, to work through those emotions. Because like I said, I was in some dark spaces in the beginning of my diagnosis journey. And without having a counselor that I could talk to about that, I'm not sure how much care I would have actively sought out. you know?
We're starting to talk about solutions. So we're starting to talk about, if this is something that you think is happening in your body, here's what to do next. And here's kind of how you should approach it. Before we go down that path a little bit more, before we end and go down that path, I was wondering, because we talked about that you had found this term called emotional debris.
I like that word a lot.
Yeah. So what does emotional debris mean?
So emotional debris is essentially another word for unprocessed pain, but it's specifically unprocessed pain that continues to surface. And processing this pain isn't going to make it go away, but the emotions, the memories are going to be less intense and less upsetting. But I think it's called emotional debris because you have all of this clutter laying around. You have all of these things that you haven't picked up. You have all of this just laying around your house, laying around your body. And it's just sitting there. And it really needs to be cleared. It needs to be processed. And when it's not, it develops mental health habits. It develops numbing. It teaches us how to numb when we have a lot of emotional debris laying around, because these things pile up, they get overwhelming. And, you know, all of those other factors that we've talked about today. But if we don't process the emotions, they're going to continue to arise. And with that, the physical symptoms are going to come and cause the exact strain that they would have initially, because they haven't gone anywhere. Just because we ignore our panic attack, or because we ignore the depression that we're experiencing on a day-to-day basis and we seem to be functioning well, it doesn't mean that that depression hasn't had an impact on our body, or that panic attack has not impacted our body. And so we can't just ignore it when we have chronic pain, because it's really causing us to put so much more additional strain on our bodies than we already do. Like, we know that any bit of relief that we can get when we have chronic pain is worth pursuing. And we are worth pursuing that relief, because we shouldn't have to be in the pain that we are. Unfortunately, that's our lived reality. But if there are things that we can do that make this a little bit less intense, a little bit less reoccurring, it's worth doing.
Right. Is there anything you want to add to? Because I know we also talked about embodied emotion.
Yes, I did mention that briefly. I love all these words for it, because I think that what they're trying to do is make that connection. And we need words for that, because we don't have a vocabulary within our medical system or our mental health system, frankly, for this connection. So embodied emotion, a lot of what this was talking about in this article was focusing on how emotions, like you mentioned earlier, they might be conscious or unconscious. So they might not be things that we're conscious of that we're doing, but they are occurring. And it was mainly focused on how emotions do hurt similar to pain. They do hurt in a similar way. And another thing with chronic pain that we know is that if you're feeling pain, you're in pain. It's simple as that. Regardless of what the cause is, if you are feeling pain, you are in pain. And so if your emotions are hurting, and we can picture here maybe like a breakup. I'm sure we've all had really intense breakups, where it feels like our chest is caving in. It feels like our bodies are too heavy to move. We don't know how to function. We feel completely out of it. All of that is a physical sensation that we're feeling. And it hurts just like pain hurts. And so embodied emotions is when these feelings get stuck in the body. They don't get processed through the brain pathways. And therefore they feel just as intense. But these sensations do function as a signal that helps the other person, or that helps a person to become aware of a feeling that requires attention. So emotions hurt. That's why we need to pay attention to them. That's why we need to pay attention to our feelings, is because they hurt like pain. It's not something that we can just disregard.
Absolutely. So like if you have anxiety, for example, it can keep you from sleeping, and sleep is important with coping with chronic pain, mm-hmm. and so on. You know, or the physical symptoms of like a panic attack, like you're talking about a breakup, same kind of thing. And the mm-hmm. aftermath of how these symptoms can show up alongside your already existing pain.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so if you're going through a time in your life, like even if you're a person with chronic pain and you're just going through a stressful period in your life, if you have things going on with family, if you have things going on with work, mm-hmm. it is worthwhile for you to consider what emotions are coming up as you're going through that so that you have more awareness and can do a bit more. Because as we started this session with, emotional processing is pain management. And so we need to pay attention to that.
And you've mentioned a few times about disassociating.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also a way we cope, but it's not helping relieve that pressure. It's just kind of like shutting it down for a while.
Yeah, it's just keeping it in the body. So mm-hmm. we're dissociating from the body, and the body is trying to get our attention. It's trying to say, hey, by the way, we're going through this, but you're not there. You're not with your body. And so it just keeps reminding you, because it needs you to process this emotions. We need to process our emotions. They can't live in the body. That's not where they belong, for lack of another word. So it, like, dissociating in the end doesn't do us a lot. It doesn't help us to avoid pain. It just makes it so that when we finally see the pain, it's really hard.
Yeah, and I also do in my own life, and I've seen other people do, is just like replacing it with other things. So I'm okay now being alone and doing my own thing. Like, I actually thrive in that space. But back when, before I was processing my emotions or like the things that happened to me and my trauma, like I had a really hard time being alone.
Yes.
Because like it would just be like all you would do is think about stuff, and it would just be very painful because I didn't have the tools to guide myself through that process yet. So that was a way that I disassociated. And I think people can relate to that, or cleaning or oversleeping.
And I think like the physical, like, again, just to like really make it clear, like how these things relate physically. Like if your new way of coping is being around a lot of people, not being alone, if you struggle being alone, you might be going out more. You might be pushing mm-hmm. yourself to be around people when maybe you can't sustain it. You might be ignoring your pain so that you can keep the good vibes going so that people yeah. stay longer. And all of that, again, is your body and your sensations that you are pushing down. And so, like, it's important to pay attention, like you said, to things we might be doing to avoid the pain that we're experiencing. And that's emotional pain, and then it becomes physical.
Yeah. So some ways to do that would be to seek, like, mental health care. Sorry, I was trying to think of the word. and, like, groups. Maybe starting practices that have to do with mindfulness. So mm-hmm. just being aware of what's going on at that time in your body. Say if you start feeling pain or you start feeling a certain way, like really delving into those feelings and figuring it out. Obviously doing it safely. There are many, many ways that you can do it. And there's many free offerings on YouTube and stuff like that to kind of like get you through that. There are lots of books, self-help books and things like that, whatever floats your boat. Mm-hmm. I think the important thing is, I don't think it matters exactly how people do process for themselves personally. Everyone's going to have a different way, but mm-hmm. just being aware of it and being able to find those things that give you relief or find those things that help you process is super important. Do you agree?
I agree. I do. And I think this is a situation where having mental health supports, whether it's peer support or counseling, is really important because, again, some of these processes might be unconscious, mm-hmm. might not be things we recognize we're doing. We may not realize the physical impact of some of the choices that we're making on our bodies. And it helps to have that, that not neutral person, but like that third person who can look in on your life and see how this might be connecting. It might be useful to see if you can find a counselor who has some experience with chronic pain. Because we know that the experience of chronic pain, it's kind of hard for folks who don't have it to understand it. And it's also this awareness part is a big part of it. So avoiding our pain isn't helping, whether it's emotional or physical. It's not helping us to do that. And the more awareness that we have, the more that we can identify an emotion in our body, the more that we can say, for me, this is what a panic attack looks like. This is what it feels like. How is that impacting? Let me walk myself through it. What is this impacting in my life? Mm-hmm. You know, how is this making my pain worse? What's causing a flare up for me? Because the more knowledge that you have about your own condition, the more empowered you are to make choices and decisions and to process an emotion. Like, you can process the emotion better if you're aware of it, essentially.
Right. So, agreed. So yeah, with that being said, I mean, we do remind you that we do have a chronic pain peer support group that we run every Wednesday night at mm-hmm. 7 p.m. Atlantic time.
And it's been really useful for some folks to see how this is working out for them. It's really mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah, well, as always, we'll put a link to that group in the details of our podcast today. Mm-hmm. Are there any parting thoughts you would like to leave with the audience today, Amber?
I think what I want to emphasize is something we talked about at the beginning. It's just that these are not bad emotions. These are not, you know, it's not your fault that this is happening. Like, if you have unprocessed emotions, it's not your fault that you're in more pain. It's really hard to deal with these things. It's really hard when we have learned a certain way of living to see the impact that it's having on us and to mm-hmm. see that it's unhelpful to us now. And I just want to emphasize that, you know, you deserve care. Again, I think I emphasize that a lot, but you deserve your care. Yeah. And remember that these are not bad emotions, that these are signifiers. This is your body trying to let you know that there's something going on that deserves your attention. And maybe it is worthwhile for you to give it that attention.
Absolutely. And I second that. It wasn't mm-hmm. until I started actually processing and actually realizing the way things were affecting my health that I can make change. And so just even if you don't feel unwell, we'll say mm-hmm. quote unquote unwell today, please do yourself a favor and just kind of be a little bit intentional about digging a little deeper. Mm-hmm. Because you may be in that process of not ignoring, but like not avoiding those things and not even realizing, because when we're children, our brains do things for us, and so to protect us, so we may not even realize half of what's going on because we may have not remembered it or blocked it, whatever. I'm not saying unlock those things. What I'm really saying is just like put yourself first. Realize that your health is the number one importance, and just if you're feeling kind of any kind of way, just investigate it. Because you're worth it.
Yeah, and those feelings that you developed as a child, those coping skills that you developed, you did the best that you could with the resources mm-hmm. you had, and it's okay that those things are not helpful to you anymore.
Right.
That's okay. Exactly.
Great. Well, thank you for the amazing talk. I'm sure we'll talk about this again. Sure we could talk about it forever. Yeah, we just want to empower everyone to feel their best self.
So, and if anybody has any questions about any of the material we've mentioned or any they want us to go deeper into an idea, feel free to leave a comment. We'd love to do it. And thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you so much. Till next time.
All right, see ya.
Bye.